Welcome to the Lifetime Guarantee audio series, Free from Depression, featuring the teaching of Dr. Bill, Annabelle, and Preston Gillum. This material was originally produced for broadcast, so what you'll hear in this series are four teaching segments, followed by a question and answer session. So let's get started now with our first session on Free from Depression.
We have come to believe that depression is the result of the way some people handle their hostility. There are exploders and imploders, and exploders dump all their hostility out onto other folks, but imploders dump it inside. Now, the scriptures say, "Be angry, but sin not." And I see Jesus getting angry, but not sinning. So anger is a perfectly legitimate emotion that God designed us to be able to experience. The trick is, when we get angry, be sure we're under the control of the Holy Spirit and use that anger or handle that anger in a godly way. Let Christ do it through us. But now, hostility is another thing. God never designed us to be hostile. So you say, well, Bill, what's the difference between hostility and anger? Well, anger will flare. It'll all of a sudden just flare and jump up. But hostility just sits inside and just sits there, like on level 6, on a 1 to 10 scale. You can be hostile at level 6. I call it being wormy.
Right.
But you can just be... You can be hostile at level 6. Now then your anger will flare off the top of that 6 and shoot on up to 10, but maybe within 30 minutes it's back down to 6 again, resting on that level of hostility. Now God never designed us to be hostile at level 6 at all. Human beings get that way because of not walking in the Spirit here on planet Earth.
Can that hostility be at a lower level, like a 2 or 3?
Oh, yeah.
It just is a brooding anger. Would that be
it
right?
It just sits in there. Yeah, that's the only way I know to say it. I've counseled people, and you have too. They're hostile at level 98 on a standardized test that you give them. But you'd never know it. I mean, they have the sweetest look on their face, and nothing apparently as they speak. You don't hear the hostility coming out, but it's all inside. They never let it out. They implode. Inside, they're throwing pots and pans and breaking windows, but you never see it.
Okay, well, let me ask you a question then. You said that there are imploders and exploders. Is the exploder as vulnerable to depression as the imploder?
No, I would say no.
Mm-hmm.
No, the imploder is the one who's the candidate for depression.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
As we began this series of programs on depression, we need to lay a foundation. We need to get some basic information settled. For those of you who listen to our program regularly, this will be familiar material to you. But let's review. Let's begin by saying God designed you with some very basic human needs. Now, in 1 Thessalonians 5:23, that scripture says that we are made up of body, soul, and spirit. Let's pick up on our needs now according to those three areas. For instance, in our body, physically, some of the needs, this isn't an exhaustive list at all, but some of our physical needs would be a need for food, a need for rest, a need for freedom from pain. Now then, let's look at the soul. The soul is the personality, the real me. My body houses the real me. Now, in my soul, I have some needs also, some soulical needs. Like the personality is divided into the mind, will, and emotions. Now, in my mind, I need to have peace there. That's a basic need I have. In my emotions, I need a sense of well-being. And in my will, I need the freedom to choose. Those are basic needs. Everybody has those. And then spiritually, I need to know Jesus Christ. Now then, our number one need of all the needs that God has implanted within us is the need for love. Now then, we need an unconditional love from another person, and we need to have love or respect for ourselves. Now, I know there's a hierarchy here. Say, for instance, if I'm in a car wreck and I break my leg, I don't want you sitting there stroking my forehead and telling me, I love you, I love you. I want you to call the ambulance. Now, after the ambulance gets there and I get to the hospital and my leg is comfortable, then I want you sitting there stroking my forehead and saying, I love you, I love you.
So you change your hierarchy.
Right. But the basic need is a need for love.
Now, why is that?
God implanted that within us.
Yeah, why?
Well, God is love, and He designed me with this need for love. If I didn't need love, I wouldn't need God.
Yeah. So back there when you said that I need love from another person, well, that certainly is true. He tells you to love me, too.
Right.
But the epitome of this, the number one need that I have is to know that I am unconditionally loved by the one who created me. Okay, now, if you can identify with depression, then if I could somehow get inside your head and read your thought life, just kind of watch it like a video monitor, I would want to watch how you handle hostility, which results from your being deprived of your need supply for love. You see, your thought life is the road that leads to depression. And the reason that most of you are depressed who are identifying with what we're saying here today is because somehow you're not getting your need met for love. You're not getting that love either from a source outside you, i.e. God or another person, or you're unable to love yourself. You're unable to respect yourself. Now, this road that leads to depression, we say it's a three-lane road, and all three roads lead to depression. These three lanes are, number one, if I could be watching your thought life, I would either see self-depreciating thoughts, beat-on-me thoughts, thoughts, oh, I'm such a sorry wretch, I'm such a failure, such a hopeless case, I hate myself. Or number two, thoughts projecting blame onto other people, or self-justifying thoughts. And these would be thoughts like, if she would only carry her into the load, if she'd do half as well as I do, then I wouldn't be in this mess. These kinds of thoughts. Or even at God. God, you're a fine one. You know, the way you treat me, I'm sick and tired of this whole thing. Projecting blame and responsibility over onto another person. And then number three is the road of self-pity thoughts, the poor me thoughts, the big pity party, the lamentations about what a raw deal that you're getting. Now, the lines of delineation between these three roads are blurred oftentimes. Maybe you can identify with a couple of these things that I have said here. But nevertheless, your thought life is the key to depression.
And that thought life has been patterned in over the years, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now remember that God established these needs, the need for love, and remember that He implanted that special need because He wants us to turn to Him to get that need supplied.
Right.
But you see, all through the years of your walking here on planet Earth, you have tried to be in charge. You have been the one responsible for generating and maintaining your love supply. It's up to you. So you have tried to get all of your needs supplied, especially this love need, when you want it and how you want it and from whom you want it.
That's right. That's right. And so, as you say, you have been building these techniques of getting this accomplished ever since you saw daylight, right? From infancy, you began to build these ways of getting love because you had this tremendous need. It's like a hunger. And so if you have a need for food, you're going to try to develop skills at getting food. You can see a little baby searching for the nipple. God built it into him that he would do that. It's all part of the way he's programmed. Now, some of you listening have been mega successful at getting love on planet Earth. And some of you can't identify with that. You see yourself as moderately successful at milking your love supply out of people on planet Earth. And then there are some of you who feel that you just can't get love. Now, according to these three patterns I've just mentioned, you have learned whether or not you can bestow love upon yourself. We call this self-esteem, don't we, or self-acceptance. And you can see then the person who's been mega successful then will view himself as, I am a lovable, lovely kind of person, and on down the line. The same thing holds true. Now, God's job description is that he runs things. This is what gods do. And you and I, when we showed up on the planet, we set out to run things ourselves. We established control. I want my way. I'm going to do things my way. Now, you're going to have to give up control if you are depressed. You have to put that responsibility in the controller's hands. That's God. And you have to learn how to rest in the fact that you are a completely loved person. Not only that, but as a new creation in Christ, you are a completely lovable person. You're a lovely person now in Christ Jesus. This is going to be the key to your coming out of this state of depression that you're in. And you say, well, how do you do that? Well, we can't explain it in one day, but we're going to be talking several days on this topic. And just be with us and check us against the Holy Spirit to see whether or not God has given us some insight that will really put you on the right track. Yesterday we were talking about our need for love, that the fact is that God is love personified, and he created you to love you, so therefore you need love. Because if you didn't need love, you wouldn't need him. And so this is the way he has constructed us. Now, our problem is that all of us on planet Earth have tried to get that need satisfied somewhere other than God. We've tried to get it from human beings, have we not?
Right.
So, we believe that when that need is not being satisfied, and it keeps getting less satisfied and less satisfied and less satisfied, that this is one of the, and probably the, major causes of depression in people on planet Earth.
And not only the major cause of depression, but it produces within us behavior that we would never have dreamed that we might be capable of fulfilling. Right?
Really gives the devil a toehold.
For instance, it may cause you to think about or become a part of an affair. And what you're saying is, I will find someone to love me.
Mm-hmm.
Or to start taking drugs where you're communicating, I just cannot endure this, and so I am going to anesthetize myself to keep from thinking. Or divorce, and you are saying, I do have a right for someone to love me. I'm going to find someone to love me. You don't love me. Or even suicide. I choose not to live without love. Rape, I'll force you to love me. Murder, which is so many times based on a revenge for an unfaithful love or denied love. And then submission to peer pressure, where I need your love so much that I will do whatever is necessary to get it.
Mm-hmm.
So we will do some very radical things when this love need is denied,
right,
or taken away.
Right. Now, God designed us with all these needs, like you were teaching yesterday, and he wants to be the supplier. But what we've done is we've set out independently to try to supply these needs ourselves, haven't we?
Mm-hmm.
Now, during World War II, they did some interesting studies with soldiers on need deprivation. They isolated volunteers, and they deprived them of food. Of course, their idea is we want to see how men would react in a prison camp. An interesting thing happened. These guys, when they went in there, they took their calendar girl pictures with them that you were all over the place during World War II. They called them petty girls, didn't they?
I forgot.
Yeah. And,
it wasn't an interest of mine.
And they put these up in their Quonset hut. Now, as they got hungrier and hungrier, they began to replace their pinup pictures of girls with pictures that they had cut out of magazines of strawberry shortcake, fried chicken, and things of this nature. So you can see, isn't that interesting now? So when you deprive a person of a particular need, then he begins to get tunnel vision and think only in terms of getting that particular need satisfied. The Bible calls this lust. Lust isn't necessarily a bad word because the spirit lusts against the flesh. Lust simply means an accelerated appetite because of a deprived need.
So we're talking about then love being deprived.
Yeah.
Right?
And you'd have a lust for that.
Uh-huh. And when we are deprived of it, we get frustrated. And so, as you say, then we get tunnel vision, and this becomes our main pursuit, searching after love.
Right.
Okay? Now then, when something like this happens to us and our love need is taken away and we get so frustrated, we need to ask ourselves, now why? Yes, this human relationship is gone, but God's love is constant. And what we're communicating to God is, I just can't get by without His love. Now, I know I have your love, God, but I can't go on living without the love of my husband or the love of my wife. So, like when a woman may lose her husband through death, and she may communicate this, I just don't have anyone to dress for anymore. I don't have anyone to cook for. There isn't anyone who loves me. My love supply is gone. Or a woman whose husband may divorce her, she will say, I can't seem to find any purpose in life anymore. Our lives were so intertwined that part of me's gone and I just can't function any longer.
And you're certainly not saying that it's wrong to grieve over a lost love like that. That's perfectly normal.
That's perfectly normal.
But to carry it on into a state of chronic depression.
This is where we're heading, yes. Chronic depression, frustration because this love need is gone, this human relationship is gone. And then again, it may not be a love need from someone else. Perhaps it's that you can't love yourself anymore, and you are depressed, and your business failed, or you failed in a relationship, and your thoughts would be, I hate myself for what I've done. Why did I do it this way? If only I could go back. And this, too, would be a lack of getting a love need supplied, love for me.
Right. I think there's another thing, too, that we want to bring up about the thing that causes depression. And with many of you who are listening who are depressed, the dynamic of your depression is that you seek to stay in control. You want to be in control. And you have hit some situation or maybe a series of situations where even though you are striving to stay in control, this thing is not working out like you had wanted it to. And you cannot manipulate the other people that are involved or the circumstances that are involved to make it work for you. And so you are really depressed over this whole thing.
So the techniques that you have established over your lifetime of satisfying this need for love and self-love, they just aren't working anymore.
Mm-hmm. And need deprivation produces frustration. You show me somebody who's not getting a basic need met, and I'll show you somebody that gets frustrated. Now, you show me somebody that's frustrated, and I'll show you somebody who is hostile. Frustration produces hostility. I mentioned this study of the soldiers who volunteered to undergo the need deprivation, the food deprivation studies. As they began to starve these guys on a real low-calorie diet, they began to get irritable, and fights would break out in the barracks where they were housed. Now, why do you think that would be, Annabelle?
Well, but they were deprived of this need.
Mm-hmm. And they're frustrated, and they're hostile. And so they take it out on other people. Some of them do, right? Now, hostility is uncomfortable, and it demands to be dealt with. And we categorize people who have this hostility into basically one of two groups in terms of how they handle their hostility. And that would be ulcer getters and ulcer givers. Now, typically, depression is a problem that is exclusive to the ulcer getter, because the ulcer givers, they dump all their hostility out onto other people.
Are you saying then that I should learn to dump my hostility onto other people?
No. Besides not being Christian, dumping hostility simply increases it. The studies on hostility and aggression show that the more the stuff that you dump, the more you generate. There seems to be an endless supply of it. And this is one of the problems in some of the support groups that I see, where they go once a week to just stir garbage. That can become a pretty depressing thing, to stay in a garbage dump and stir it. And they walk out of there, a lot of them tell me, they walk out feeling all worked up and all anxious inside.
Now, what we're trying to do here is give you some understanding of what's happening in your life. Let's use this little story. Let's say that you're in an area not familiar to you, out for a hike, and you get lost and you wander, and then it gets very dark and a storm comes up. An electrical storm, and all the street lights, all the house lights, everything go out. And then it starts raining. And so you come to a fence and you climb over that fence. You haven't any idea where you are. And then you get so tired that you sit down under a tree. And as you're sitting there, all at once you become aware of very heavy breathing, and you hear big bodies moving around. And then all at once you hear a growl, a deep growl, and you think, oh my soul, I climbed over that fence and I'm in a game refuge. And what do I do? And you are just terrified. And all at once a big burst of lightning comes out, and you see that you're in a zoo and there's some lions over there and they're behind the fence. Well, you heave a sigh of relief. You understand what you have to deal with. Now, what we're trying to communicate to you is some understanding of what you're having to deal with. If you're identifying with depression, what we're saying to you is that somehow you are being deprived of the love you so desperately need. And as we talk together, you're going to discover something very wonderful. You are loved, and you are very secure. You just need to know what you're dealing with.
The problem of depression. You can't get vaccinated when you're little kids, so you're immunized against it. It's not contagious. You can't get it by drinking after somebody's got it. It's no respecter of persons. There's no age limit on it. Even little babies can get so depressed that they can die. Both non-Christians and Christians are susceptible. It's not a disease, but yet it rages out of control today. It has reached epidemic proportions. Now, why? We're talking about this subject for a few days that is decimating the Christian ranks. Now, why is this so?
Well, as we talk about that, if you need an expert on hand, and if experiencing something makes you somewhat of an expert, you've got one right in the studio with you today. Because I was in and out of deep depression for many years as a dedicated Christian.
Okay, now, does that mean you got this thing by the tail now? You're not susceptible to ever going back into that again? Are you saying that it was a demon and that you went through deliverance, and now that you've done that, you have no problem with it anymore?
No, that was not my experience at all. It was a progressive decline into depression, and it has been a progressive growth out of that flesh pattern.
Now, I made that comment about deliverance a minute ago, and we certainly want you to understand that we do believe that demons are out there, and we do believe that we're to take authority over them. But you and I are talking about a type of depression today, and in this entire series, that is simply a matter of walking according to the flesh instead of walking in the Spirit. And there is a very understandable, appropriatable, if I can use that term, solution to this problem, isn't there?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, now, but you said that you were depressed. Now, can you describe how you felt? What was going on in terms of your emotions?
Okay, let's look at my thought processes first of all. I couldn't remember anything nice that happened yesterday. Somehow or another, the only thing that I could remember were the bad things. Everything good had been obliterated. And I couldn't imagine that anything nice could possibly happen tomorrow because of my circumstances, because of my private world, what was going on in my life. So I just have today. And I have learned from this man that I'm living with, as we've told our testimonies before, I have learned that I do not meet today well.
That's when I was really on your case a lot.
Right. Now then, my productivity, the things I would do. For instance, we had small children, and I would have a load of diapers to fold. And being patterned for being a very goal-oriented person, I would time myself to see just how long it took me on the diapers, and I would really have just an allotted time to do that.
Really a driven person.
Yeah, and I had a big clock above my freezer there where I would stand and fold my diapers. As these thought processes, as this depression would come over me, my hands would start moving slowly, and I'd look at the clock, and I'd think, well, I'm never going to make my goal here. What's wrong with me? Or when I'd finally get them folded, and I'd walk to put them in the different drawers in the house, and I would open a drawer, and I would be very aware that as I would put those things in the drawer, that it was almost like a slow-motion camera was running. I couldn't do things well anymore.
Okay, let's go beyond symptoms now. Those are the symptoms that you're talking about. And let's look at the root cause. Depression is really not the problem. Depression wasn't your problem back there.
No.
It was simply a symptom of the problem.
It was how I handled my problem.
That's right. And the basic problem was you were not getting a basic need met that God had designed you to need. Now, that need, in your case, was the need to be loved.
Right.
You were seeking it from me. I was your source. I was your goal. You were going to try to get love out of me. And you were going to try to bestow love on yourself, were you not?
Right.
And you became powerless to eliminate the problem. You became powerless to get that love. The harder you tried, the more counterproductive your behavior became. And so you went into depression.
Right.
Now, there are many people that seem to view depression as the problem, and so they seek to treat the problem. They seek to treat the depression. If I can make the depression go away. But now, wait a minute. Let's put this into a medical realm. We all know that pneumonia produces a fever. So let's say your kid has pneumonia and you decide, oh, his temperature is 102. I've got to get that down. What if you view then the temperature as the problem? And you begin to pack him in ice. And so he goes down, the temp goes down to 98.6. And you say, okay, he's well now. You take the ice pack off, and the temp begins to come back up. You can see what you're doing. You're treating a symptom instead of the problem.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the problem's going to go away, all right. You're going to kill the kid if you keep packing him in ice like this.
Mm-hmm.
So we have got to get at the root cause of the depression, which is simply a symptom.
Okay, now like I said, I'm speaking as someone who has experienced depression. Let me share with you a little bit more about how I began walking in depression, hoping that this will give you understanding of what you're going through right now. Now remember, my original problem was that my basic need for love was not being met any longer, and I didn't love myself. Now, why? Well, because as I began walking in my earth walk here, I established certain techniques for getting love. We all do that. Mm-hmm. Mine would be different than yours.
That's right.
But my techniques were that I'm going to perform for people and then they will love me. Performance-based acceptance. And so I am driven, I am forced, I am constantly evaluating how can I perform for them and do it well so they will love me. Mm-hmm. Now then, I also have to perform for myself. If I perform well, I accept myself. If I don't perform well, I reject myself.
So this is what I'm saying then when I say you could bestow love upon yourself.
Mm-hmm. Now then, when I get into marriage, for 22 years, my techniques for getting love worked real well. I was performing and people were applauding for me. I had all sorts of ribbons, awards, and accolades. Now then, when I'm 22, I get married. And it isn't that I forget all of you people out there in the world. It's just that I've chosen one person that I want to love me because I love him. That's my husband. But now, in our marriage, I was a very strong, capable, enthusiastic performer, and this threatened Bill. His flesh was that he was threatened by strong, capable women. So he wasn't about to praise me for my performance. He tore me down for my performance.
Okay, now I'm busy trying to bestow love upon me.
Mm-hmm.
So when you perform so well, doing not only your role but half of mine, that makes me experience low self-esteem as a male, as a husband. And so my fleshly way is to tear you down, eliminate you, and then that builds me back up again. I can love myself better today.
But you don't even know how to spell depression, do you?
No, I haven't been troubled with that.
But now when my needs ceased to work, when you weren't loving me and I couldn't love myself, then I developed this coping mechanism called depression, and it escalated from being a day or two to a week. And as the circumstances didn't change and my husband still didn't say, thank you did a good job, the way that I spell love was thank you and you did a good job, then my depression deepened, and finally there's more